Well, thank you very much, Ollie, and well done with all the names. But that is your kind of job, isn't it? So being able to read the Bible should come quite easily. In 1968, a U.S. reconnaissance ship called the USS Pueblo was captured by the North Korean military. Now, this was an amazing coup. Because it showed several things. It showed that the North Koreans could be magnanimous as they took photos of all the prisoners and sent it out to the world so that everyone could see how nicely the prisoners were being looked after. They had a great trophy as well in a US warship. They could show how strong and mighty they were. And also they could say at the same time that the US was out to get them. It's the story they've been telling right from the beginning of their country, and here was the proof. But back to the photo of the captured prisoners. This was a brilliant piece of propaganda because they could show to the world these nicely dressed, clean, well-shaven, well-fed looking sailors. Unlike the US, they might be saying to the nations, we know how to treat people properly. But if you look in detail at the photo of these US prisoners, they're all doing something rather naughty. Each one of them, with their right hand, is holding out the middle finger. Now, I won't give you a demonstration as to what that looks like. It's one of the oldest human gestures. I discovered that Diogenes, the Greek cynic philosopher, did this to people who didn't like him. In America, it's called flipping the bird. I don't know why it's called that. That's what it's called. And we often call it giving the finger, but they did it very slyly in ways that were quite discreet. But if you pay attention to the detail of the photo, rather than it being just a photo of we're doing rather well, being looked after by these nice North Koreans, it's a photo of defiance, a finger stuck up against the enemies. Well, as you listen to the words from Genesis chapter 5, I wonder what you thought. It's a list of funny, difficult-to-say names, isn't it? But if you pay attention to it, if you have a look, as we're going to do in a little bit of detail over the next few minutes, the message of Genesis chapter 5 is rather extraordinary, both grim, terrible, and wonderful. You see, Genesis chapter 5 tells us that death is coming. Death is coming. Death is on the move and it's growing. That's some bad news. And yet, God is stronger than death. And there will be comfort for the people of God. Well, how can I make all of those claims from a list of names? Well, we'll find out in just a moment. Firstly, then, death is coming. It's coming for me and it's coming for you, Genesis chapter 5 wants to tell us. Now, in March, I started to get chest pains whilst I was cycling. And I cycle a lot to visit people in hospital and nursing homes and things like that. It's a great way to get around. And I found that every time I tried to cycle up a hill, I'd get a stabbing pain in my chest. It wasn't good. And so I did the sensible thing. Men apparently don't often do, but I went to the doctors and I explained what had happened. The conversation went something like this. Just tell me a bit about your family history. Are your grandparents still alive? No, they're not. Well, tell me, how did your paternal grandfather die? Oh, heart attack. Oh, how did your paternal grandmother die? Oh, heart attack. Oh, okay. How did your paternal grandfather die? Oh, heart attack. And tell me about your father. Is he still alive? And has he had any heart attacks? Oh, yes, he's had a heart attack. And of course, as soon as the grim sergeant family history was unveiled, the doctor was right there logging me into the chest pain clinic. I'm fine. I'm still alive. Don't worry about me. Apparently, it was stress. And the reason I had it, I think, in March was because at the end of March, you know, that I do the most stressful thing that I do ever, which is to take away the whole of year four from Brandscore School on a holiday. And I find it ever so stressful. So apparently that was probably the reason for it. Genesis chapter 5 is a medical history of the descendants of Adam, and they have one thing in common, the surprise, horrible refrain, "And then he died. And then he died. And then he died. And then he died." It's repeated over and over again. Now, if you've been reading Genesis chapters 1 through to 4, or the first couple of chapters, we'll be told about human beings made in the image of God. Death should be a bit of a surprise, because God doesn't die. If human beings are made to be like him, then human beings are made to be eternal as well. And yet, as Adam and Eve choose to be gods in the place of gods, death comes into the world. So much so that God says to Adam, "You are from dust, and to dust you will return." Death, that terrible force, has entered into the world. And in Genesis chapter 5, it's on the march, and it grows as it progresses from one generation to generation, increasing its stranglehold on the human race. If you pay attention to the ages, they're extraordinary, aren't they? And it's not because they had a different way of counting ages or anything like that. No, the claim that Genesis is making, and I wonder what you make of it, is, of course, that Adam really did live some 930 years, but nobody lives like that today, and that is the point. And Genesis chapter 5 narrates how we got to the point where nobody lives that long today. Look at some of the ages. Adam is 930 years. Then we go down to Seth, who's 912 years. Enosh, 905. And there's a few blips of ups and downs, but by the end of our passage, when we get to Lamech, it's 777 years. And by the beginning of Genesis chapter 6, it says no one's going to live for more than 120 years, which I guess nowadays is just about possible. I don't know what the world record is today. Death is on the march. It's unrelenting. It's not going to give up. It can't be stopped, or can it? Well, the message of Genesis chapter 5 is that death is serious. Death is powerful. Death has such a hold on us that all of us will be victims to death at some point. Well, I wonder what you make of that. There was a journalist for the New York Times called David Brooks, wrote a brilliant story called brilliant article called "The Moral Bucket List," and he asked us to reflect on how we might live our lives in the light of our mortality. And he says that many of us spend our time trying to accumulate what you might call resume virtues. Good things about ourselves that we'd be happy to put on our CV, things which will impress other people: how educated we are, how much money we make, how big our house is, what kind of holidays we go on and so forth. But he says instead we should concentrate not on resume virtues, but on eulogy virtues. Things that, when it comes to the end of our days, people will want to celebrate about us, because they won't say in my eulogy or yours how fast my car was — it's not fast — or how big my house is, or anything like that. They won't list off all my qualifications or things that I've done, but they will comment on whether I was a good brother or uncle or friend or parent or child. They will comment on how generous I was, or how quick to forgive and slow to anger I was. Well, if death is coming, let's live in the light of our mortality today. Death is on the march. Death is coming for me, and it's coming for you. Let's not imagine then that death is nothing at all, something that can be just brushed under the carpet. No, death is terrible, and grief is real. Death is coming, but God is stronger than death. We've seen the big picture. We've seen the sailors all lined up in their uniforms, and the message is terrible. But let's focus in, because, if you like, there is a surprise sting in this passage, a revolt against death. And this happens with two people who are mentioned in the list of people, in the list of names in this medical history of Adam's family. The first of them is Enoch, who's mentioned in verse 21 through to 24. I'll read verse 23. Altogether, Enoch lived a total of 365 years. That's not very good in the Genesis 5 scheme of things. Enoch walked faithfully with God. Then he was no more because God took him away. Amongst all of the people who are walking away from God, there is one person who refuses to do that. Instead of walking away from God, Enoch walks with God. And because God despises death, it was never part of his plan for the world. And because God loves his people, he shows his power over death by rescuing Enoch from the world without death. Enoch walks with God and then is no more. God shows his power over death by taking Enoch as his own without death. Death has no dominion over Enoch, and God shows that he is stronger than death. I love Song of Songs, which says, love is strong as death, passion fierce as the grave. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can the floods drown it. And God shows the great truth of that here as he redeems Enoch for himself. And because God can rescue Enoch from death, he can rescue us as well. If death is on the march, if death is growing and claiming more of the human race for itself, surely as Christians we are right to come to the one person who has power over death, a power which he demonstrates right from the beginning of the Bible, which gives us a little foretaste, a little prediction, a little taster of what is going to come as God himself battles against the power of death and is victorious in the person of Jesus. Death is coming for us, but God is mightier than death. And there is comfort, there is hope, there is peace and rest for God's people. Well, that is one person, Enoch, who shows that death is not going to be victorious. And here is another person, Noah, whose name means rest or comfort. If you look down to verse 29 with me, you can see this. So Lamech, oh, just a little comment here. You might remember from Paul's fantastic talk last week that we've already got a Lamech in Genesis. He is a child of Cain. And in fact, we've already got an Enoch as well. I think just like, not that imaginative with names today, are they parents? I've got to try and find a name for another child. So 1983, loads of kids were called Ben. Parents aren't very imaginative. Perhaps they weren't back then either. So we've got two different Lamechs and two different Enochs. One is descended from Cain the murderer, and one is descended from Seth, the last child of Adam recorded here. So Lamech produced Noah. He called him Noah, and there's a little footnote there if you've got your church Bible, a little C, and that takes us down to the bottom where it says, Noah sounds like the Hebrew for comfort. It's a symbolic name because comfort or rest is coming. Something good is on the horizon, which these people in the grip of death are hoping for, and they reach out in hope as they name their new baby Comforts or rest, recognizing that something great is on its way. As I get older now, I've passed the momentous age of 40, I realize how important rest is to me. We went to a concert in London last night, didn't get back till 11:30. Now, I like to be in bed by 10 o'clock nowadays. I don't know if you're the same. I think that's quite sensible, don't you? Go to bed at that sort of time. If I go to bed later than that, I end up exhausted the day after. And I think we've got two more concerts and late nights this coming week. So wait until you see me next Sunday. I'm going to be absolutely shattered because I realise how important rest is. And maybe if you're in the middle of a very busy period of life, you know how important rest is as well. Maybe there's a holiday on the horizon that you're just waiting for, a time to put your feet up and to relax and to lay the concerns and stresses of everyday life to one side just for a small bit of time so that you can find refreshment and recover a little bit. Rest is coming. Comfort is on its way. Genesis chapter 5 tells us, in the midst of all the death and decay, a day of hope is coming as Noah is born and as God prepares to save his people through Noah. Again, a little foretaste, a little glimpse into the future of what God will one day do by sending his son Jesus. He will come not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. Death is coming, but we know the one who's stronger than death, the one who gives us comfort and hope in the face of death, and he cannot be defeated. Amen.